Welcome, everyone, to the Apocalary Podcast. I'm Steve. He's...
Lawrence Van Beek.
Okay, we'll take it. It's halfway in between. Folks, glad to have you here along for journey number 4 of season 2. Look, I'm actually keeping track for once. But tonight, we're going to talk about something a little different. It's we're not going to hold up our copies of the ESV and say, look at us. There's where we shall read of. But tonight, Larry wants to talk about the second coming. So Larry, why don't you take it away and we'll kind of lay the table there.
Yeah. Well, Steve, I thought we would do this. And then I thought, well, because the second coming really comes from all different passages of the Bible, that we wouldn't pick a particular passage. Of course, then now that we've begun this, I realize this was probably a really bad way to go about it.
Too late.
we're both going to talk about our traditions, but I did discover something just piddling around the way I did. I found that that the return of Jesus actually comes up in different faiths, which is really odd, you know. That the Muslims actually have some view of the return of Jesus, even though for them Jesus isn't God, he's a prophet, so they can still accept him coming. Right, and the Jews, of course, they think that the Messiah is coming. That Jesus didn't quite fulfill all the requirements of a Messiah, but that there's still a Messiah coming. I think my pastor once said that one of the guys in the group said, "For us, he's coming. For you, he's coming again." Which was a very nice thing to say. at least my pastor thought it was wonderful. I thought maybe the guy was being a bit. Patronizing, but I don't know.
Is it patronizing or patronizing? Sorry. Well, anyway, I'm calling back to an old joke, aren't I? Sorry. I'll skip that one.
The American who talked to the British comedian said, "I like your comedy, but you're a bit patronizing." And he said, "That's patronizing."
Such a great joke.
Anyway, this whole thought of Jesus coming again. Now, I'm going to talk mainly from my tradition then. Which is the Pentecostal. We, oddly enough, in probably 30 years ago or 40 years ago, you go to the 1970s, you find that Pentecostals were a number of things. We were premillennial, like staunch premillennial. We were pre-trib rapture. Okay. And we believed in all of the literal stuff of dispensationalism. We felt that everything in Revelation, it was an actual 7-year time period in Revelation, that the events of Revelation were literal and they happened upon the earth, that there was an Antichrist coming, right? And that all of these events would precede the second coming of Christ. Now, for us, a rapture and the second coming were not the same event. For us, the rapture happened. And then, depending on who you were, there was a 7-year period, and then Jesus comes again, right? And then after Jesus comes again, there's a 1,000-year period, which for us was literal as well. And after the 1,000-year period, then it's that millennium, then it's, you know, the end of time is at that point in time. But we were very strong believers in the second coming of Christ. And actually, our whole conversion is set. The whole idea of winning people to Christ and going out into all the world and winning people to Christ had to do with our strong belief in the second coming of Christ. Now, several things have changed for us. Pentecostals are no longer, we're no longer pre-trib rapture people. Some are, right? You discover that this whole idea of a rapture is a very North American concept anyway.
Right.
So we kind of went away from that. Actually, when I was in school, when I was in an Assemblies of God college in the United States, if you did not believe in the pre-trib rapture of the church, the 7 actual years and then the second coming, you could actually lose your papers.
Oh, wow.
Okay. Yeah. And then I came back to Canada and found out Canadians had no such theology at all. Like, we were all over the place, really. And we felt that was more scholarly. So we thought we were a mile ahead of our American Oh, brothers and sisters. But anyway, in the 70s, it was a big thing. We used to have a singer, actually. Do you remember a guy named Larry Norman?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
You've heard his songs, right?
Yeah, I am a servant.
So I'm sitting in the hall.
Yep.
He did a couple of songs about the rapture and the second coming. And he talks about two men walking up a hill. One disappears. The other is left standing still and all that, which actually may have been from Matthew. That's a Matthew 24 thing, Mark 13. It may have been more about the Romans destroying Jerusalem than about the second coming of Christ.
Interesting.
Yeah. Interesting. Yeah. However, we put it to the second coming. We were very good about that. And so we felt that all of those verses talked about Jesus coming and, you know, standing on the Mount of Olives and coming down and being here.
Right.
And of course, our writers at the time were guys like, I was going to say Josh McDowell, but Josh McDowell was an apologist.
Right.
The guy I'm thinking of, who's the guy who wrote Late Great Planet Earth? Hal Lindsey.
Hal Lindsey, right? Yeah.
Hal Lindsey. And Hal Lindsey was really popular. And he wrote books. He wrote two. He wrote Late Great Planet Earth and Satan is Alive and Well on Planet Earth, I think. Mm-hmm. And his books, his early books, which I think he made a ton of money on, they had everything to do with a view of the end times and a view of the second coming of Jesus, right? And Hal Lindsey wrote about the stuff in Revelation being helicopters. You know, remember the locusts?
Right, yeah.
The horses' faces. He said those are helicopters in the battle. And when it talks about the war things burning, he said, wow, they were going to build them out of plywood, some special plywood. And of course, really, he didn't have to go there because there's stuff burns on battlefields all the time.
Right.
And the Pentecostals were really well-versed in this. The guys on TV were generally dispensational, which meant, again, that they believed in a literal 7 years, a very strong distinction between Israel and the church, that the prophecies to Israel are different than the prophecies to the church in the end times. And that, but then when it finishes again, it finishes with Jesus returning, right?
Yeah.
And I found that when I started studying Revelation, I went through some of these different iterations, dispensationalism, and then I became a little more symbolic, right? And then I became more preterist, and I'm kind of somewhere in the middle now. But I did find that even though I'm very, very spiritual about Revelation, or very, very symbolic with Revelation, I oddly enough become completely solid on the second coming of Jesus.
Right.
So everything can flit anywhere it wants, but when Jesus returns, that's absolutely real, right?
Well, Larry, maybe to touch on that, does that come because of that passage in Acts? Is that why you get to a very literal point? You put that plus Revelation together and you say, well, hang on, no, there must be a literal second coming of Christ.
I'm not sure, Steve. I just always felt like Jesus was going to come back, like the Matthew stuff, even though it may point to, you know, the Roman stuff. I really felt that that Jesus' return is absolutely critical to my theology. So you can do anything you want before he comes back, but he is going to come back, and he's going to come back as a person,
right?
You know, and for me, it's a stronghold of the faith. The rapture doesn't matter to me so much.
Right.
I kind of hope I hope the whole thing's real, you know, and future rapture, and, you know, I meet you somewhere halfway in the air.
High five each other.
No, I got on that t-shirt. Hey, when I get raptured, you can have this t-shirt.
Yeah.
You know, my shoes are all in a nice neat pile, like some of the guys do when the rapture comes. And I'm completely fine with the whole idea of a rapture. Even though they say it's not biblical, because it's true. I mean, the word rapture doesn't show up in the Bible. You know, you remember even in your theology that you were just reading to me, Steve was reading me from the E-free view, which is very loose about this stuff. But you remember the different views of the rapture. We did that when we did Revelation. We did pre-trib rapture. happens before the tribulation. Mid-trib rapture happens in the middle of the tribulation. Post-trib rapture happens at the end of the tribulation. And then there was also partial rapture, which was a Jimmy Swaggart thing where they felt like good Christians got to go in the rapture and bad Christians had to stay on the earth. And I thought it was so nutty. And yet, you know, it depends on how you read those, the letters to the churches, right? And then pan-trib was it'll all pan out.
Sometime.
Sort of where the E3 seem to be at.
Just like you were saying, I mean, sorry to maybe butt in there, but, you know, as you were reflecting kind of the Pentecostals, I think back to when I got involved in the Free Church, it's the belief espoused at the time was almost identical. It was strong premillennial, pre-tribulation, dispensational through and through. It was a required belief within the Free Church to buy into those things to maintain your licensing. Licensing at the Free Church is done kind of on this weird level where the districts do it and the national body approves it, but the local church has to be involved and you don't have to be licensed to pastor, but you know, they'll kind of figure a way to kind of move you along, I guess. I don't know how it works, but anyway, I mean, it's just very interesting that you have two denominations that kind of, I wonder if that was the popular culture at that time and that influenced, either it came from denominations such as the Pentecostals who were hugely culturally influential within the church at that time, don't you think? To the rest of evangelicals kind of reflecting that back, going, hang on a second, this is the prevalent view of the day, so we are dispensational and we are pre-trib and we are premillennial and all those kind of things that kind of came out are reflected in, you know.
The whole dispensational thing, you know, in the 1850s, you got Darby, and some people put dispensationalism way before Darby and them, but most of us put it after that. And then it became like the Scofield Bible was very dispensational in all the stuff that it did. And then of course the when it got to television and radio, the very popular TV and radio guys in North America were dispensational in the way that they viewed the future. And of course, everything about Revelation for them is speculation. It's all speculation, right? It's the guys with the sign, the placards, the end is near. It's the preacher saying, I believe the end is within my lifetime, right? And things like that. And the oddity of it was, this is where the church was. This is the stuff we believe. But we were also very evangelical during those times.
Right.
Like our mission to win people to Christ was huge and much stronger than I've seen it lately. Of course, I'm a little removed from it now, you know, working in colleges and things and being the schlep that I am. So there is that part of it, right? But it intrigued me. It intrigued me to no end that they believed all this stuff, you know, but they also believed that they wanted to. The ministers did that. They wanted to live their lives for Christ and Christ alone. And we've become more culturally sensitive since then. I don't know if that is all that positive necessarily.
Yeah. Well, and don't we see again? I'm thinking of where does the influence of like the Tim LaHaye's, right, and the Left Behind series, just that kind of comes out of popular Christian culture. It's not like it comes out of one denomination, but it kind of reflects all of North American. I mean, like you said, to reflect all of North American evangelical experience is these Left Behind series, which reinforces all those dispensational, premillennial, pre-tribulation, you know, Antichrist, Christ coming in the flesh, you know, all those types of things are reflected in those movies too.
Yeah, and it works really well. I mean, it makes for good movies and good books. You know, it makes for good story. It really does. And they must have been good writers. I mean, you know, because how many books did they do? 11 or 12 or 13 of these books?
Yeah, far too many for really, wow. Anyway.
Well, my Revelation class used to fill up because of people reading those books. So it had an advantage for me as well.
Yeah.
I would teach them a little bit differently, but I've always been very careful not to mock any of the other views, because really we don't know for sure.
Yeah. Right?
And I've seen like people that really love Jesus following these views, and they're not harsh, they're not miserable people, they're not crazy people, they're just people that believe in this direction. And yep. But we were talking about the second coming of Christ. In the end of all of that, Jesus does come back, and right. I think no matter whether you believe in the rapture and everything being literal in Revelation, or whether you're symbolic or you believe everything was first century, the reality of Jesus coming back is still there.
Yeah.
So however we view life and however we view this next few years of our lives, this upcoming future, you know, whether it be overpopulation that kills us, or meteors that kill us, or Satan coming out of the abyss that kills us, we still see stuff happening on the earth, and we still see a need for Jesus to return.
Right, right.
Yeah. And he still does, right? He still does.
Yeah, yeah. And reflected in both our traditions too, right? You know, both mm-hmm. our traditions will strongly hold to that. You know, you and I were talking beforehand about, you know, the three pillars that the free church falls on, you know, what did I say? It's a bodily return and, oh, where it is. Yeah. A personal, a bodily, and a glorious return. You know, those types of things that are, it has to be physically Jesus. He has to return personally for him literally on the earth. You know, all those types of things, which would be the exact same thing in the Pentecostal Assemblies of Canada, right? You know, the very same belief.
And the Baptists would believe the same thing. And yeah. I think even the Presbyterians would be there.
Yeah.
If you want to go outside of evangelicalism and you get to the Presbyterians and others, I think the Catholics would believe the same thing on Jesus returning, right?
Right.
So we have this, there is this commonality amongst the churches, right? And that's that Christ is going to come back.
Right.
And it's an important thing. It's something the reason I wanted to talk about it tonight is because it's not something we talk about as much. When we were all dispensational, we were really strong, and we kind of agreed with each other so we could talk about these things. We could talk about the rapture. We could talk about Revelation. We could talk about the future. We could talk about this coming Antichrist. And we all tended to agree on all of this stuff. And so we could talk. But when people stopped agreeing and they started saying, well, the dispensationalists are wrong, you know, or the preterists are wrong, the people that believe it was symbolic are wrong, then we became a little disjointed, and then the conversation ended.
Right.
So I used to get asked to go to churches to teach on Revelation because the pastors didn't want to touch it.
Right.
And so then I could come in and teach on it, and then they could always say, well, you know, he's crazy anyway. We don't teach him. I don't know why we ever brought him in.
Yeah.
But they were afraid to touch it because it when everybody was disagreeing, then it was really hard to talk about it without being embarrassed.
No, go ahead. No, you go. Finish.
No, you go.
Well, I was going to say, have we ever got back to where we're comfortable? Because, I mean, in the free church traditions, we're still not very comfortable talking about it.
I haven't heard, other than the ones I preach, I haven't heard a sermon on Revelation. I don't think I've heard one in years and years. So it's not something pastors want to step into. They don't want to try it. A few would, you know, a few of the big names would do it. Jack Hayford, I think, was one that kind of started speaking about Revelation away from the dispensational view, which was hard to do in the beginning, right? So if you were into popular Christianity, if you're into television Christianity, the whole dispensational thing, the whole, you know, literal Revelation was where you went. But if you were into scholarly Christianity, then they tended to mock that kind of thing. And it's almost like scientists talking about climate change. You know, you almost can't talk about it because you know, the popular thing is that the climate's going to change, and it's because of, you know, carbon in the air. But some of the scientists were saying, we do believe it's changing, but we don't necessarily think that's exactly why. Well, then you can't get grants. and you run into all kinds. You're on one side or the other, you're going to get yourself in trouble, right?
Right.
And it was the same on this whole idea of Revelation. One side or the other, you're going to get yourself in trouble.
Right.
And that's why when I teach on it, I usually approach even my own view very carefully. And kind of give all the views and then tell them the right way to think.
Well, I've heard all the people who are wrong. Let me tell you. Well, and you and I were, again, we were talking before the break, folks in the Free Church, one of the Pentecostal assemblies, you have something called the Essential Truths, right? Yes. This book. In the Free Church, we're arrogant. We call it the Gospel Truths, right? nice. But in that book, which was produced, I'm trying to think when it was even written, maybe, what's it say here? 2011. They highlighted in 2008, the Free Church kind of gave up on that premillennial requirement of all its pastors. Well, the primary, I would say while the Free Church is predominantly, if you would talk to the average pastor in the Free Church, I bet you a high, high percentage of them are premillennial, pre-trib, all that kind of dispensational. But they actually dropped that as a requirement for its pastors, that they do not have to hold to that view to actually be hired and licensed and credentialed. So,
and the unfortunate thing, if they speak about that, then other people would treat them as if you're stupid because you have this certain view. But we remember when we were doing the study that Wahlberg was a dispensationalist, and he was a very good scholar. Like, there was nothing wrong with his scholarship. We just disagreed with what he did with it. But he was a very good scholar. Caird was a good scholar, and he would have been preterist, I think, and these guys were, so there were good scholars coming from all of the different views, So, and most evangelical scholars became what we called preterist futurists. So they saw it applying to the first century church, but they saw a future element to it as well, right? Not very many were preterist symbolic or anything like that, where I kind of went. But they had all of these, they would tie these things together. Remember Leon Morris, who I lean on all the time, he was preterist futurist, and he did a really good job in his little book as well.
Right.
But the big thing, of course, is that no matter what you do with anything else, you still end up with Jesus coming back. And I wish that we could at least talk about that again, because we don't talk about it much anymore. There's a little bit of an embarrassment about this whole thing when we talk about it, I was thinking about, you ever see the movie How to Train Your Dragon?
Yeah, I think I have seen it. Yeah.
It's just a little kid's movie. But in this movie, the one guy who's not, they're all Scottish, right? They're Viking, but they speak with a Scottish accent.
It's Sean Connery in Hunt for Red October.
Even when Sean Connery's Japanese, he speaks Japanese with that. Scottish broke. but in this one here, I mean, the guy, he's the only one who doesn't speak with a Scottish accent. And he's, the reason they use Scottish accents, of course, is there's nothing tough about a Norwegian accent, right? It's hard to be tough and speak like borky, borky, borky. But, that's probably why the Vikings were so tough, because they had that crazy accent that they had to fight through. But now we're in trouble, aren't we?
You're making fun of me? You're making fun of me? I'm Leif Erikson.
But this, the one guy, he says, they said of my father that he tore the head off a dragon while he was still a baby. And he said, do I believe it? Yes, I do. In some ways, the second coming of Jesus has to be that way too. Jesus is coming back.
Yeah.
And whether speaking of it embarrasses us or not, do I believe it? Yes, I do.
Yeah.
I do believe it. I believe he's going to come back, and he's coming back for us.
Yeah,
and it's for us he's coming back.
Yeah, it's our only hope, right?
Yeah, it is the great hope, isn't it? Like, yeah. Part of the great hope is that we're going to be with him forever, you know. And some people believe that when we die, I even read somewhere that, you know, we all get a star. Well, there's lots of them out there. There's plenty for all of us.
That's right. And I got a star for you, and a star for you.
I'm not sure it would be that pleasant living on a star.
Yeah, yeah.
Or maybe one of the many planets
that's
so we don't know what heaven is.
Yeah.
You know, there are people who say they know what heaven is, but they usually point to something to do with the New Jerusalem, right?
Yeah.
And then they say that's heaven. That's not, I don't think that is. I think when it comes to heaven, the Bible just gives you tiny little glimpses because you don't know. And but that Jesus is coming back, I think, is a real important part of our theology. It has to be. It's a cornerstone of our theology.
Yeah.
You know, that he came as a man, that he was 100% man, 100% God, that he rose again, that he went back to heaven, and that he's coming back to get us. These are the essential pieces of our theology, and they all wrap around Jesus, of course.
Yeah.
So I did want to talk about it because I know that we've gone away from, you know, some of the best songs are dispensational.
Yeah.
You know, predators just don't get good songs. Like, you know. I remember. Did you ever hear Steve Martin do a thing, Atheist Got No Song?
Yeah, that's right.
and they do it as a song. The whole thing's a song. And you know, they don't really have a song, but we do, and it's that Christ is coming again.
Yeah. So. But that is probably the best place to leave it right there. Folks, we have hope. Christ is coming.
Yeah.
Well, I hope you enjoyed our conversation. I thought this was just a lot of fun for just Larry and I to sit and chat through this and talk through this and talk through some of our denominations. Beliefs that they hold, even hold in print, by the way, which I'm sure you can find all those good things on the websites of both the PAOC and Evangelical Free Church of Canada and all that kind of good stuff. So if you're interested in following that stuff up, do it. It's I can't remember what is it PAOC.com or .ca or something?
Well, if you just Google PAOC Essential Truths, you'll get right through to it.
Yep. And the Free Church is EFCC.ca, so you can find that stuff there. Check it out. It's kind of fun reading, because both documents are pretty extensive. So, until next time, though, we're glad that you came along on this ride. Until next time, I'm Steve. He's
Dr. Van Beek.
Dr. Van Beek, and we will see you next time on the Apocalypse Podcast. Thanks.